Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers sitting on the best record in the NBA at 24-3. And as a fun reminder, this is LeBron's 17th season, which makes the fact that he's leading the NBA in assists for the first time in his career that much more impressive. And oh, by the way, he's played in every game so far. Here's LeBron on the theme of this season, load management.
If I'm healthy, I play.
That's just going to be your approach all year?
I mean, that should be the approach. I mean, unless we're getting to, like, you know, late in the season and we've clinched and we can't get any better or any worse, and, you know, it could benefit from that. But, I mean, why wouldn't I play if I'm healthy? It doesn't make any sense to me personally. I mean, I don't know how many games I got left in my career. I don't know how many kids that may show up to a game that they're to come see me play. And if I sit out, then what? You know, that's my obligation. My obligation is to play for my teammates. And if I'm healthy, then I'm going to play. If coach sits me out, then I'm not healthy. And it's just that simple.
A little dig at Kawhi there during the press conference. You think, Nick, that LeBron should take a page out of Kawhi's book and consider load management with where he is in his career and how hard he's been going so far this season?
No. Kawhi's book is its own book and needs to be, I mean, you said it, the theme of the season's been load management because of one guy. And it's hurt the standing of the league. It's hurt television ratings. I think for the average fan, they think the whole league's engaging in this when they're not. It's one guy who happens to be the reigning finals MVP. LeBron's approach is, of course, the correct one and has been his approach throughout his career. Aside from last year, where he suffered a major injury. There's only been one season where LeBron missed major time. His first year back in Cleveland, where he missed a two-week stretch dealing with a knee injury. Now, it became a bit of a punchline, because while he was dealing with it, he went to see Ohio State win the national title, but he missed 8 games in a row dealing with a knee injury. Other than that, LeBron plays 76 games a year, at a minimum, every year. That's what he's done for the better part of 17 years. The team that invented load management, the Spurs, with Tim Duncan played 74 and 77 games in years 17 and 18. Dirk Nowitzki played 77 games in year 20. The initial load management was, you don't have to play all 82. It's foolish to play when we're on our third game in 4 nights and you're a long-term veteran and you might have a bit of a lingering something. Take the night off. There is no extra machismo and I've got to play all 82. But the idea that we would go from where it was, you should play 80 plus, to where it became, which is 75 is a reasonable number, to Kawhi's missed 8 of 28. He's missed a higher percentage than last year when he only played 60 games. It would be devastating for the sport if other people took this approach. And Danny, I appreciate what LeBron said at the end there, where he said, I don't know what little kid came to see me play. If you watch them play in Atlanta, wasn't a little kid. It was a grown man right behind the Lakers bench in a LeBron jersey, ostensibly from Atlanta. They play there once a year. He probably bought those tickets 4 months ago. And if LeBron that night, even as a grown-up, for that fan who is what makes all this possible, if LeBron says, I'm taking the night off, that's the worst moment of the guy's sports year instead of the best. He understands his responsibility to the league in a way that the vast majority of our superstars also do. One happens not to.
This might be one of the favorite things I've ever heard come out of his mouth, because I think it is
it is sending a message league-wide. And I do think this was more problematic a few years ago when it was kind of becoming a status symbol. Oh, I'm good enough. I can sit over here, take the night off. I can, you know, load manage. I can take a rest and I can do that. You'd sit over there in the, you know, in your nice looking suit. It would be a status symbol. It was kind of a cool thing to do.
And what you're talking about was it was a really tough spot for the league because the two best teams in the West, the Spurs, who were the first team to do it, and then the Warriors, when they had KD, knew they were just going to coast through the regular season. So you had the two best teams in the Premier Conference, both teams engaging in it, which is where it really started to catch hold.
And then Adam Silver sends a stern message to the league, which everybody pretty much abided by except for Kawhi Leonard. But ultimately where we've come now is where Adam Silver can do all he can try to do everything. He can try to send letters. He can try to send warnings. He can try to send messages. It has to come from the players themselves that realize for the health of the game, we need to go out there and we need to play when we're capable of playing. And it can't become a thing. It can't be a status symbol. And that's where I appreciate LeBron as the face and the voice of the NBA, sending a message to every player out there that might be considering this. If he can do it, then I can too. Because that's really where the message has to come from. It has to come from the players. And if LeBron's out there voicing that message, it's going to resonate throughout the league.
LeBron is much more of a team ambassador, a league ambassador than Kawhi is. All Kawhi really cares about is, can I be there for my team? Or, you know, what about winning the title for this team right now, whatever it takes. And LeBron cares about the integrity of the league and people coming to watch him and all of it. It's a much bigger conversation with him.
I agree with the LeBron point. The Kawhi thing, we'll see. I mean, you know what would have helped the Clippers? If they had beaten the Bulls the other night in a three-point loss when Kawhi sat out his eighth game of 28 games. So I understand that what we've decided with Kawhi, which is the whole reason this is a conversation this year, that no, what he's doing is actually the selfless thing, and other shows will discuss, is LeBron being selfish by playing? Is he stat chasing? Is he doing these things? As opposed to, you show up to work when you're healthy to play. To show up to work, which has been the constant in all work, is sports or otherwise, since work.
It's
like, I mean,
and
since we were hunter gatherers, yes. If you can hunt and gather, you go do it.
And you get an off season, you have off days, there are times.
And nobody's saying you gotta be all 82.
No.
Nobody's arguing.
Back to the NFL now. The Chiefs picked up their fourth straight win Sunday against the Denver Broncos, a pretty dominant win in a blinding snowstorm. And while they have had their struggles, the injuries, that defense, they are two wins away from the exact same record that they posted last season. When asked if he likes the Chiefs getting slept on, reigning MVP Pat Mahomes said, quote, "I think I do." Danny, you think people are sleeping on Mahomes and the Chiefs this year?
I absolutely do, especially considering coming into this season, they were the odds-on favorite to win the Super Bowl. And what's changed? I don't know. It's the same roster. They got the same pieces there. I get it. Mahomes was hurt for a couple weeks, and he had an injury. But as he continues to get healthier, this team is a force to be reckoned with. And you saw what he did in the weather this past weekend against Denver. Didn't faze him one bit.
At all.
He's got so much natural talent. They have weapons on the offensive side of the ball. And I know the defense is still a concern, but I don't think it's a significant reason why you should be, this team can't win the Super Bowl. Their defense statistically is better than Green Bay's and better than Seattle Seahawks. And we talk about them as potential Super Bowl candidates. Why can't we talk about the Chiefs that way?
And neither Green Bay nor Seattle has the offensive firepower.
Not even
City.
Close.
Big difference last year. I feel like I said this a month ago. Last year, the Chiefs were 12-4. Everyone loved them. This year, they're going to be 12-4. Everyone's out on them. Of course, last year, 12-4 was good enough for the one seed. This year, unless New England loses to Buffalo, they're going to be the three seed. So there is, I understand that significant difference. But the defense is playing far better right now than it did at any point last season. They just added Terrell Suggs, who's got 4 forced fumbles and 5.5 sacks this year. We'll see what impact he can make in place for the injured Alex Okafor. But dating back to week 7, because the Chiefs were at their low point, I would say, after the back-to-back Indy and Houston losses. Mm-hmm. Indy, they played terribly. Houston, they gagged the game away. Here's what they've done since then. Denver, national television, watch their quarterback have his kneecap dislocated and annihilate them. Play Green Bay on national television with a backup quarterback. That game is 24 apiece in the fourth quarter. They beat Minnesota. a very good Vikings team with a backup quarterback. And then the Titans game, a game they dominate for 58 and a half minutes and somehow invent a way to lose at the end. Then the defense plays great. They beat the Chargers. The offense and defense play great. They beat Oakland. They go to New England and beat them. And they just annihilated the Denver Broncos. They haven't had what I would consider a bad game of football since week 5 against Indy. And they are finally, for the first time all year, healthy. Of course, right now, the Ravens have been the best team in football. I think the Saints are the most complete team in the NFC. After those two teams, there is no team you can make to me the credible case you should have more faith in than the Kansas City Chiefs.
B-Dubs, want to play a little in or out?
Let's do it.
Okay. Last night, Drew Brees led the Saints to their 11th win of the season on his historic night, but the Packers, Seahawks, 49ers all have 11 wins as well. Danny Cannell, you in or out on the Saints being the best team in the NFC?
I'm out. Man, do we fall in love with what we just saw. And it was impressive, and it was a great story for Drew Brees. But are we forgetting the defense giving up 49 points, was it? 48 to the San Francisco 49ers, including that game-winning drive. Garoppolo just went right down the field like it was not a big deal. I think the Seahawks are the team to beat from the NFC. I'm stuck with them from day one, and I'm sticking with them through thick and thin.
You know, I'm in, and I have been accused before of viewing something and loving whatever I saw last. And so I saw last night a Saints team that offensively looked unstoppable. They have the ability to run. Drew Brees looked better than he ever had. But defensively, I think they're getting things going, and I think that defense can win, especially if teams have to go through the Superdome.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that I necessarily think this team's going to make the Super Bowl, because how the playoff seedings fall is critically important to that. But right now, they're the most complete team in the NFC. They went 5-0 without Drew Brees. They have a legitimate running game. You mentioned Michael Thomas, without question, one of the 5 best receivers in football. You said he might have the best hands
in
football. The defense, the only question I have for the Saints is, they lost Rankins and Davenport along that defensive line. Didn't hurt them last night. Could it hurt them in the postseason possibly? But right now, they are the most complete team in the NFC, so I'm in.
All right, sticking with the Saints, a big reason for Drew Brees' success this past few seasons has been his star wideout, Michael Thomas. Thomas, just 11 catches shy now of breaking Marvin Harrison's record for most catches in a season with 143. Danny, you in or out on Thomas breaking the record this week?
I am in on this one. We've all documented how it's the only weapon, really, that Drew Brees has to go with. Plus, you got Malcolm Butler out for the season. Adoree Jackson's missed a couple games recently. Who knows if he's even going to play here for the Titans. So they've got some issues on the defensive side of the ball. I think he's going to get it.
I'm in as well. I think, you know, when you think about Drew Brees, you're saying he doesn't like the glory, things like that, but he always has his eyes on records. Mike Thomas gets this record next week. He's had 8 games with double-digit catches. This happens this coming week.
I'm out that it happens this week. I'm not quite as certain as all of you that it's going to happen at all, only because, I mean, if Marvin Harrison calls Michael Thomas and says, I don't want you to break my record, if I'm Michael Thomas, I'm listening to Marvin Harrison.
No,
I'll do whatever he says, but he would need 11 to do it this week, more likely in week 17, unless Marvin puts the call in.
He's done it 6 times this year, 11 or more catches, including last night.
Maybe I'm factoring in a Marvin Harrison math here that you guys are not, but I am out on it happening this week.
I gotcha.
All right, one in Rome. The Carolina Panthers will reportedly bench Kyle Allen for third-round rookie quarterback Will Greer, which now has some speculating that maybe the Panthers will indeed bring back Cam Newton next season. Danny, you in or out on Carolina bringing back Cam?
I've done like a full 180 on this one.
Oh,
because I was out on him earlier in the season saying maybe he's done.
His career.
I was in, yeah.
Yep.
And I still think that's a question because of his health. I think it's where is he health-wise. But if he's healthy, if he passes all the medical tests, he feels good enough to go. And the way things have transpired with Kyle Allen, I don't think Will Greer is going to be the answer either. He's cheap. Bring him back for one more year in Carolina. Bring in a coach who's going to utilize him and say, you know what? I'm going to buy into Cam Newton and see if you can give it a run. $20 million is a bargain in today's environment.
I'm in as well. You know, it's going to depend on his health. If he could come back healthy, I would just draft a young quarterback like you mentioned, but I would use Cam up as much as I could. Allow this young quarterback to mature behind Cam and then use your young quarterback in the next couple of years.
I have not moved 180 degrees on this. I've stayed exactly where I've been the whole time. Everyone fell in love with Kyle Allen because of a four-game winning streak. Guess what Kyle Allen turned into? Back into Kyle Allen, the guy who went to multiple colleges, the guy who went undrafted, the guy who was cut twice before he caught on with the Panthers. He obviously, when they said, in theory, moving on from Cam Newton, I sat here and told you they will be in the market for a quarterback again a year from now, guaranteed. They're now realizing that Kyle Allen couldn't even make it through the year before they're like, okay, he's not the answer. They're now to Will Greer. Of course you keep Cam Newton. All the narrative surrounding Cam has been as if he's a pending free agent. I would be anxious about giving Cam Newton a long-term contract extension or a new contract because of the injury stuff, but $20 million bucks is Nick Foles' money right. in this league. Of course you keep Cam Newton. Of course I'm in.
Man, the narrative is changing on Cam Newton. Yes.
We're allowed to do that, right? I apologize to Carson Wentz before.
The correct narrative has stayed the exact same on Cam Newton all year long.
All right, the Cowboys picked up a big win Sunday over the LA Rams. It was their first win this season against a team with a winning record. After the game, Cowboys legend and Fox NFL analyst Troy Aikman, who hasn't shied away from criticizing this team this season, talked about just how dangerous Dallas can be.
This was their best team win, and I think Dak Prescott said it best. It was a very complimentary win, and I think the takeaway from this is that what we knew coming into the season, quite honestly, if this team is playing the way that they're capable of playing, we know that they can move the football really against anybody. We know that they have the ability defensively to just smother opponents, much like they did here tonight against the Los Angeles Rams. They can play with anybody, and that's why, as bad as the season has looked at times, it's not so far-fetched to think that they can't get hot at just the right time, and anything can happen. They just got to get in first. And that game next week against the Philadelphia Eagles obviously is a big start.
Just that. Just get in first, and then you should be all set. All right, Nick, do you think NFC front runners should be dreading the Dallas Cowboys in the playoffs?
No. I'd be the opposite of that, licking my chops. I'd be excited to play them. The Cowboys or Eagles, whoever wins this just mess of a division, is going to be the worst team in the postseason, neck and neck with whomever the last wild card out of the AFC is. Because if Pittsburgh might get in, and if Pittsburgh with Duck Hodges or Mason Rudolph's the quarterback, then you could argue, you know, an eye test. But of the 12 teams that gets in, Dallas, if they get in, is either going to be the 11th or 12th. You want to play that team. You would rather have a bye if you're one of the top four teams in the NFC. The next best thing is going to Dallas and whooping up on this football team. I heard what Troy said, which is peaking at the right time. Well, define peaking, because they were at the nadir. They were at the ultimate low point of their season the day before the Rams game, coming off three straight losses where you, against New England, I didn't think they played that poorly, actually, against New England. The offense couldn't get anything going. They had the ridiculous tripping calls go against them, but who cares about it, because it actually benefited the Patriots, so let's not have a officiating controversy. And then, but Jerry Jones was angry about that game. And then he really should have been angry about the Bills game on Thanksgiving and should have been livid about the Bears game the following Thursday. You had 10 days to prepare for another team that I think was a little fraudulent, the Rams, that everyone's like, oh, are they peaking now? No, they are who they were through the first 12 weeks. The Cowboys are who they've been, Danny, through 14 weeks. A team with immense talent that has underachieved consistently, that's had six opportunities to put it all together against a good team and has done it precisely once. In order for them to go on this run, they would have to do it again next week against Philly and then again in the wild card weekend against either San Francisco or Seattle. It's not going to happen.
You make some excellent points,
but you are crazy.
Okay. You're crazy. Tell me a coach that would say, we're excited about having the opportunity to stop the number one ranked offense yards per game, the number one ranked offense yards per play, the number two passing offense, the third best on first on third downs. This offense is scary. Now, I get what you're saying, but if, and that's a big if they continue this momentum, and I might be sounding like I'm talking about both sides of my mouth because I kind of like the Eagles mm-hmm. with the points, but if they somehow win the division and they play well these last two games, I guarantee you nobody wants to go to Dallas to face the type of weapons they have. They have a top-tier running back in Ezekiel Elliott. They have an MVP candidate. Remember at the beginning of the season, we were all in on Dak Prescott, who can make plays with his legs. He does present some problems. Amari Cooper is a top five wide receiver in the NFL as far as what the threat is to what he can do to you. That is a scary proposition. And oh, by the way, their defense is top 10 in a lot of categories. Coaches would be dreading having to go on the road to face that team.
All right, so let's look at the eight teams that we believe, let's assume Dallas wins the division, mm-hmm. are going to be division winners. You have Baltimore, New England, Houston, Kansas City, Dallas, New Orleans, Green Bay, and Seattle, right? So those are eight division winners. Let's just pretend the playoff format was the best team that doesn't win a division gets to pick which place they go to.
Right.
So San Francisco, you can pick of those eight.
Right.
Guess what their top pick is? Dallas.
But all right, so here, let's put it this way. But here,
of all the teams you could face, Dallas is the one you want to.
But put it this way. Do you think they would be? I don't think that. I think if it was the Eagles, they would say, sign us up. Let's go. We'll go to the Philadelphia. We don't care. I think with the Cowboys, they're more nervous saying, man, we're getting screwed by the system because we have to go on the road with 11 or 12
men. Well, they shouldn't
have to go. This team.
They
shouldn't
have to go on the road.
I agree with you there. But I do think it makes them nervous. I do not think they want to play this Dallas Cowboys team.
Well, if they win Sunday, a team is going to have to play this Dallas Cowboys team.
I was all excited because I was like, Troy must have been watching first thing first when we said this. No, but that was after the game.
Yeah, it was after the game.
I might have stole it from him.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.